So I will start by addressing a question that I think you asked like last time. Why do we use the FRW time slicing, right? So I think like last time I gave you the answer, like why we can do that. But here, like I want to say something because it's something that is important when you are trying to solve a physics problem, okay? So I think like the real answer to this is because we can and because it's the most convenient. Okay? And the different time slicings that you use, of course, doesn't change the physical result. Anything that is observable, shouldn't depend on that. And as a result, we are going to choose the one that is the most convenient for doing the analysis, right? And of course, the metric that is the simplest in an expanding universe has one parameter which determines everything, which is the scale factor as a function of time, right? And you cannot write anything that is simpler than that. So that's the one that we are going to use. Okay? So yeah, like it's not about like I cannot use the other ones. I can always choose something which involves everything. Right, by doing a gauge transformation, but we shouldn't because it will only make the solving the problem harder. Okay, so that's basically the leftover question from last time. Then we'll continue with what we are doing today, and today we are going to understand how weakly interacting massive particle or WIMPs can be the dark matter. And that will be related to this concept of thermal freeze out. Okay, so I know you all went to, hopefully, all went to Mina's lectures where she talked about Higgsinos and how Higgsino can be a dark matter candidate because it could be the lightest of all the supersymmetric particles, or LSP. So today we'll be talking about the cosmology of Higgsinos. So how does this particle starting relativistic eventually become behaving like more like the dark matter in the universe today? So the Higgsino is actually a little bit more complicated. So we are going to do something even simpler. So today the particle that will be talking about is a chi particle, which is a dark matter, which interact with us through weak interaction with a Z exchange. Okay. So both coupling here are the SU2 gauge coupling or G2. So this case is well, this cross section I think gets probably computed a lot. And we'll be working in the limit m chi is bigger than mz. So this annihilation cross section at high temperature would go as g2 to the 4 over t squared for temperature much, much bigger than m chi. And it will be like, I think there's 4 pi. Chi squared for t. Okay, so this is the something that it's a 2-2-2 like a scattering with exchanging z. This cross section is probably computed in your QFD class, and this one you didn't, but you know like at very high temperature there is only one energy scale in the problem, which is the temperature. Cross section has dimension to 2, so that's the only way it can scale. It is as 1 over t squared. So these are the input we'll need from field theory. And then we'll take this process and try to understand like what is happening in as the universe is cooling down for some particle which has this type of interactions. Okay. So basically we're going to take these cross sections and draw this curve like last time when we talk about baryons. where I want to understand the density of chi as a function of time. So again, let me draw some reference. So this is the radiation, this is matter. So and we know that this particle in the end would behave like matter, and in the early universe should behave like radiation because it's relativistic. So the question is, what is happening in between, and where do these two lines actually lie? Okay. So we'll be answering what is happening here, what is happening here, and what has been seen in the end. Okay, so that will be the first part of the lecture, and we'll go through this step by step. Okay, so to start with, let's look at the case when the universe is really hot, okay? At T much, much bigger than m chi, as well as the Z boson mass, which is roughly 90 g. Okay, in such a universe, the one thing that we know is the number density of standard model particle goes as T standard model cubed, right? It's just radiation, especially for the standard model case. We will also use n gamma at some like in a lot of places to talk about standard model radiation, but it's not necessarily exactly the photon. It's just some standard model radiation mass, which is in the universe. And this is always the case, right? So the standard model has so many like light particles in this at these earlier temperatures. The standard model particles just behave like radiation, and they are going to keep this density throughout the evolution that we're going to be talking about. Okay, so the second thing that we know is that the cross section at this time goes as g to the 4 over temperature square. Okay, and here temperature standard model. So in order to understand what is happening here, the question we want to address first is whether the chi and the standard model are in some equilibrium, right? If the chi and the standard model are in some equilibrium, then what I know is the temperature of the chi and the temperature of the standard model would be the same. Otherwise, we need to cook up some initial condition for chi. This will make this situation much more complicated. Okay, so how do I understand if these two are in some equilibrium? So first, we have an interaction rate, which goes as the number density of the particle times the cross section. Right. So here, let me just take the standard model number density, and I get an interaction rate between any single chi particle with the standard model to go as g to the 4 times the temperature of the standard model. Okay, so this is basically plugging these two things in here, and this is what I'm going to get. In the standard model, this this coupling is like 0.1-ish, so this is not a very big, a very small number. So so the interaction rate is roughly equal to the temperature. Okay, so now we want to the question we need to answer, right, to determine whether I'm in some more equilibrium is whether this interaction is fast enough. Okay, so by, of course, this is a dimensional number. So by asking the question whether it's fast enough, we need to compare it to something, right? Also dimensional. So what is the dimensional thing that we should compare with? This rate gamma. Any takers to the question? What scale do we have at that time? So is there something, some parameter which determines how does the universe evolve? What is that parameter?
A of t.
Huh?
The Hubble parameter.
The Hubble parameter. Okay. So the Hubble parameter is a parameter which determines how fast does the universe cool down, right? How fast does the universe expand. And as a result, it classifies basically it determines how fast does the temperature of the center model change. And if the interaction rate is fast enough compared to Hubble, then like the interaction is fast enough, faster than the rate of change of this temperature. And then the system will be in some equilibrium. Otherwise, you won't be. So here, the first important quantity that will come back again and again to when we talk about thermal freeze out or a lot of dark matter analysis would be this comparison between the interaction rate of a certain interaction and the Hubble parameter or the expansion rate of the universe. Okay? So we know, this one we know, we just copy paste. And the Hubble parameter in the radiation dominated universe, as we talked about last time, is equal to the temperature squared over M Planck. So what this gives me is G2 to the 4 M Planck over T standard model. OK, so how does this thing look like as a function of temperature? Okay. So here, what you see is that it decreases as the temperature grows, right? And until at some point it crosses 1, when the temperature is equal to G2 to the 4 M Planck. And for this coupling of order like 0.101, this is a very high temperature, very high energy scale, which means that at like no matter what I set for the initial condition of chi, at really, really high temperature, much, much higher than any of the remaining dynamics will happen, I already summarized the standard model. And at that temperature, I will be able to set. So at this point, I know any time below here, I have T chi equal to T standard model all the time. Right? They are in thermal equilibrium. So now, instead of calling it a standard model, there is only one temperature in this system. And that's how you see that in the very early universe, in the case of the WIMP, the radiation, well, the chi abundance, which are radiation, exactly tracks the evolution of the center model bath. Okay, so that's the early universe. Okay, so this this is the case for freeze out, some of the case of WIMP and some of freeze out, but this is not always true, right? Because in principle, this coupling doesn't have to be like order one. It doesn't have to be weak interaction. It can be a very, very weak, really, really weak interaction, right? Not SU2 left. So in that case, the coupling can be very, very tiny. And then as I decrease the coupling, this line will just go down, right? So and I know as I decrease this coupling to zero, of course, there's no thermal contact at all. And there's no thermalization between these two systems. OK? So then we want to understand what is this critical G2, right? Or G interaction. So the question is, what is G interaction critical below which there is no thermalization? Okay, so now again, here I have a dimension for number, right? The temperature of thermalization, which is equal to G interacting to the 4 times M Planck is a dimension for number, so I need to compare it to something. So what is the latest the thermalization has to happen between the standard model and some massive species?
Well,
Anyone? We saw this last lecture when we talk about baryons. When does this line continue to grow all the time, or like does it change at some point?
It drops some radiation to baryons.
Okay, so the you get to the, it's qualitatively right. So this point where like this line has to change is when the temperature is equal to the mass of the particle, right? So below, of course, like when the temperature is higher than the mass of the particle, all of these things that I said is true. But once the temperature is below the mass of the particle, then the standard model temperature is too low to produce this chi at all, right? So of course, there's no summalization, there's no equilibrium between the two that can be reached below this point, correct? Which means that this line, though I draw it like this, should more or less look like that. Okay? And if summalization doesn't happen at this point, it will never happen in the universe at all. So what it means is T summalization, which is equal to that, has to be bigger than mass of the particle, right? If it is smaller, then there's no summalization between these two sectors. And this tells me G has to be bigger than m chi over m Planck to 1 fourth power. So if you are talking about GeV mass particle, this is 10 to the 19 GeV. This would be 10 to the minus 5 for m chi or GeV. OK? So if the coupling is less than 10 to the minus 5-ish, summalization between these two sectors will never be able to happen. And in that case, like the initial condition of chi matters. And that will be the case of something that you are going to work on in your tutorial, I think, with Mali and Gong. And that is the case of thermal freezing. But the important thing that will be useful for our lecture today is that this tracking between the chi density and the standard model density doesn't happen automatically, right? There is a requirement that needs to be satisfied for this to be the case, for summalization to happen, and it puts a constraint on the strength of the coupling that you can work with. And that is the important message for this part of the analysis, which is related to the initial evolution in the very beginning. Okay? Questions? All right. So so we are now going to go into details about thermal freezing. You are going to work on it. So now let's come back to the case that we are actually interested in, where summalization happens nicely in the early universe. And I have basically a coupled fluid of the standard model bath and the chi bath, which are both like radiation. Of course, this stops at this point here, right? And that will be the point where the mass of the chi is equal to T standard model, which is also equal to T chi. So just like the baryons, when the temperature cools down to be comparable to the mass, the equilibrium between this process going this way and the backwards stop, and chi would freeze out. Okay. So we know that, and similarly as the case of baryons, we know this thing will drop exponentially because you're only picking up the Boltzmann tail of the standard model bath. So in the case of the baryons, we know the reason for it to stop at some point. And the reason is that number density of the baryon over number density of the photon is 10 minus 10, right? So when you deplete all the anti-baryons, the baryons has nothing they can find to annihilate with. And this exponential decrease of the number density stops. So here, of course, I'm working with chi's, which are symmetric, meaning that there's as many chi's and chi bars. So in principle, each chi can find something and annihilate with to become standard model particle. So what do I mean when I say that I can have a freeze out abundance, right? So what is happening is, again, we are going to use this equation here to see what is actually happening in the early universe. And the qualitative picture is that the time is not infinite. Okay. We do not have infinite time to annihilate all the chi's with the chi bars. We only have finite amount of time, which means that though there is equal number of n chi and chi bar, they do not necessarily annihilate with each other to produce standard model particles. So now we want to understand, when does this annihilation stop? Okay, so we are going to use this equation. So again, I have number density at of chi when the thing has frozen out, or n chi freeze out, times the cross section. And the cross section, I know, is going to be this one here, right? Because at this point, they are already non-relativistic. And then we have the Hubble scale, which according to things like most of the energy density is in the standard model bath, is basically the temperature of the standard model bath at freeze out squared over m Planck. So with this equation, I know this quantity. I don't know this quantity, but I roughly know this quantity. Okay, and this quantity I definitely don't know. So I'm going to write, and we set this equal to 1 when this this annihilation stops. And this allows me to solve for the number density at freeze out as a function of the cross section and the Hubble scale. Okay, so this is going to be basically H over sigma, which is equal to R for 2 squared. So the fine structure constant of the weaker interaction squared, m chi squared, right? T chi final squared over m Planck. Okay, so I've done something, right? I've written this n chi final as a function of another parameter that I don't know, okay? But here, like, I'm already seeing some progress because I know these quantities are small, much smaller than m Planck. So what I know is that if I take this over the number density of photon at the same temperature, I'm getting some quantity which is which is like this, and it is a small number, right? So what this tells me is that my expectation that the particle density is going down exponentially very, very fast, right? Dropping by many orders of magnitude is still true, right? I'm getting a very small number density compared to the number density of photon now. But it doesn't really tell me, like, when does this stop yet, OK? So how do I compute a relation between this chi t and the mass of the particle? So that will be the next step. And let me move this thing up. So the next question is, what is T chi freeze out? Okay? So what information did I not use? The information I did not use is that this rate is going down exponentially, meaning that And I know in Boltzmann distribution, the number density of chi is equal to times halves as a function of time. And that has to be equal to n chi final that I just computed there for any temperature, right? So this is equal to m chi squared t chi final squared over m Planck g2 alpha 2 squared. OK, so what are the small numbers here? Well, this is the only big number here, right? The rest of them are roughly the same. So the only way that I can compensate with this bigger number m Planck or small number t over m Planck is by having a very small exponential, right? So because this dependence is exponential, t and m chi shouldn't be that different, right? They are different only by a logarithmic. So I can solve this equation or approximately solve this equation by assuming that all of these quantities are roughly the same, while the only quantity that is larger is m Planck. So what this allows me to do is going to be, so this is roughly equal to log of m Planck over m chi to, right? OK, so what this tells me is that then like if I plug in here, that's how I would get the m Planck in the denominator and roughly satisfy this equation, up to corrections that are small, right? And this log, right, between something that is 10 to the 19 GeV over something that has TeV also is a large log. And this log for in cases that we're interested in is something like order 20. OK? So what it tells you is that the temperature where it freezes out will stop is roughly the mass of the particle over 20. OK? And this is what we expect because this decay is exponential. Of course, you won't be, if you decay as exponential for like a very, very long time, you are going to have like a zero density in the end, right? So that's how these two temperatures or energy scales has to be close to each other. OK, so now we have a second equation here together with that equation over there. Then we basically can write the number density of chi at this point here, right, as a function of the mass of the chi and the Planck scale. And what I'm getting is the number density of chi is roughly equal to some 1 over 20 squared, 1 over alpha squared, times mass of the chi to the 4 over m Planck. Okay, so again, the small number comes from like m chi over m Planck, which is how you see that the sum of freeze-out has taken away a lot of energy densities from the chi sector. Okay, any questions? All right. Okay, so we got to this point. And now I have an equation which has, unfortunately, still two unknowns, right? I don't know what is n chi, and I don't know what is m chi. So I'm not done yet. But there is still some information I have to use, which is the fact that at this temperature of matter radiation equality, I want the chi to be exactly this, the right amount to be dark matter in the universe, right? So now we are going to work on number 3. OK, so this is number 2. which is the redshifting, right? After freeze out. Okay, so now, now what do we do? So we know at t equals t equality, I have rho chi at equality equal to the standard model radiation mass energy density, right, at equality, right? So this is the definition of equality, which are mostly radiation, and as a result, it will just be T gamma to the 4, okay? Or T equality to the 4. So that's the equation I will be able to use. And then, of course, this quantity and this quantity here, right, are related to each other because what happens between these two points are basically redshifting of this energy density. So we know that rho chi of equality is equal to m chi times number density of chi at equality, right, is equal to m chi the temperature ratio cubed times the number density of chi at freeze out. So this ratio comes from the fact that this number density is just redshifting as the universe is expanding. And the scale factor of the expansion is basically inverse of the temperature. So now I have related this quantity, which is equal, otherwise equal to T equality to the 4, to some quantities that I want to solve for. So now how many unknowns we have? Well, this one I know, right? It's m chi over 20. This quantity I don't know, this quantity I don't know, and this quantity I know. So I have another equation, but I haven't increased the number of unknowns. So now I can put these two things together and solve for what is m chi, right? So I plug in n chi final here. So I have m chi times T equality over T chi final cubed times T chi final squared times M chi squared over alpha 2 squared. Okay, so now I can solve for M chi. I have three of them, right, is equal to, I have one of the T chi final on the right hand side, I have T equality ones, and I shouldn't forget about the M Planck here, right? Okay, so this is what I get. And this quantity I know is M chi over 20. So I would just replace this by 1 over 20 and remove 1 here. Okay. So what do I get in the end? Is the mass of the particle that I should be targeting on, right? This is the quantity that I want to find. And it is equal to the thing to 1/2 power. Okay? All right. So this quantity here is roughly a EV, right? That's when the equality happened. This quantity I know is 10 to the 19 GeV. This factor is something like 10 to the minus 3. And 2 is equal to 1, so this is equal to 0.1. Okay? So now what I'm left with is 10 to the 19 minus 3, 16, 15 minus 9, so 10 to the 6 GeV to the squared, or otherwise known as TeV squared. No, TeV, right? So what do we find? We find that if this chi particle, which couples with a weak interaction, if it has a mass that is of order TeV, right? So here, like, I have omitted a lot of order one numbers, right? But like, if it has a mass that is order TeV, which is very close to the weak scale, right? You remember from Mina's class, a weak scale is roughly like 200-300 GeV. You get a particle that has would have the right abundance, the right energy densities to be the to be the dark matter in the universe today. And that is the one miracle, because normally you wouldn't expect this mass can be anything, right? You wouldn't expect this mass to be exactly the right amount that is so close to the scale, which is the weak scale, or the Higgs mass. Okay, so that's the Wien miracle.
So will you estimate the log to be 20?
Huh?
You have a logarithm of the between the M Planck and the M chi is 20. Don't you already assume the M chi is somewhere?
Oh, but like if like M chi is TeV is like a 20, if it is GeV it's 22 or 23, right?
Oh.
So like this number doesn't change very much. And here I have set 1 over 20 equal to 0.1, right? 1 over 30 I would say is 0.12. Okay, so like the beauty of the log is no matter how big a number I put in here, like the logarithmic of this big number is always a number that is not that different from each other. It's like 20, 30, whatever. Okay. All right. Thank you for the question. So this is a Wien miracle, and because of this, we really care about WIMPs, and we want to look for it. Okay, and in particular, this is very close to the mass, which would be the Higgsino that we care about. So if I really care about Higgsino, which as LSP. The thermal target is 1.1 TeV. Okay, so I got this number awfully close, but I cheated, right? Like the type of like a sloppiness which is in this computation shouldn't get me some number that close, but it's just a coincidence. So this is the case of the pure Higgsino that Mina talked about in split supersymmetry, and it is a target for experimental searches. So now I'm done with all of the discussion of the early universe dynamics of this particle. I talked about in the beginning how they thermalize with each other, what are the requirements, which are important and a lot of times is neglected by people, but you shouldn't. And then we talked about the freeze-out temperature and how it is related to the mass of the particle, this factor of 20. Happens for a lot of things that you are going to see. Then we talked about the redshifting afterwards, which allows us to extract this mass from a lengthy computation to be like the weak scale, which is a Wien miracle. So next, I will be telling you about experiment. Okay, but before doing that, let me inject some additional philosophical bit. Which is, what are we doing when we say we have a dark matter candidate? Okay. So this requires us to actually answer always three questions. And the dark matter candidates that you heard about, hear about in a lot of talks actually didn't satisfy this criteria. And as a result, they are not very interesting. So the first criteria is for any dark matter candidates, I want to talk about the dark matter candidate. I need to talk about the thing better has a Lagrangian, right? And has an interaction we can write down in a Lagrangian, and hopefully is motivated by theory. Theoretical considerations. Or puzzles that we are interested in otherwise. So for example, in the case of the WIMP, it is very interesting because the scale that we find is so close to the weak scale where we think there's a hierarchy problem and there should be some solution to the hierarchy problem. And this particle might have a very strong relation to the solution of the hierarchy problem. And that's why we are interested in particles which has masses that are close to the weak scale, right? So that's how WIMP satisfies this first criteria, which is it has a Lagrangian, which is otherwise motivated by theoretical bundles. So the second thing is what we talked about already, is it has a nice cosmological evolution or a reasonable production mechanism, right? So so the WIMP, for the WIMP, the production mechanism is somewhat phased out. It is something that we understand, and it happens relatively automatically, right? Though the computation is somewhat lengthy. So the third thing that matters is how do we look for it, right? There are a lot of things we can talk about to be dark matter, for which we will have no way to look for it whatsoever, right? So we can talk about it, and knowing that they existed is important, but it didn't really point us to a direction to go forward and make progress. And as a result, if you fail the third test, then it's also not very interesting. So like for any dark matter candidate that we consider interesting and we want to go for, it has to satisfy these three criteria. It has to be motivated theoretically, hopefully. Then like it should have a nice production mechanism. And then we need to find ways to look for it. And now let's talk about how we look for a WIMP. Okay, so this is so important. Let me just keep it up there. Is this going to fail? Hopefully not. Yeah, okay, so how do we look for a WIMP? Okay, so the understanding of how to look for a WIMP is basically in this very simple diagram. And I'm going to write something more on it. But all we need is this diagram here. So the first thing is we already talked about something about this diagram. And that is the process which sets the production, the abundance of dark matter in the early universe. So this arrow here is freeze out, right? So dark matter annihilation into the center model, that sets the abundance. And that is a process we already talked about. So there is something that is very similar to that, which is called indirect detection. Okay. Which is using exactly the same process, which sets the like dark matter abundance in the early universe. So what is indirect detection? So so in the early universe, we talked about this gamma over Hubble a lot. But we can also just talk about the gamma, right? What that gamma tells you is that dark matter can and anti-dark matter can come together, annihilate, and produce standard model particles. So after freeze out, this rate becomes very, very small because the dark matter density becomes very, very small. The cross section stays the same, so gamma becomes smaller and smaller as a function of time. But we also get much, much better at seeing something from dark matter annihilation with the instruments that we have, right? There's no way like I can measure like what's going on like a really, really early universe like billions of years ago. But like if it is something that is happening in our galaxy, in our neighborhood, even like if the rate is much smaller for this dark matter, anti-dark matter annihilation, we might be able to see the effect of that. And that's basically the idea of indirect detection. In particular, what we are trying to hopefully see is I have some two dark matter particles, or dark matter and its antiparticle, giving me some standard model particle, which eventually result in photons, okay? So for example, like if the dark matter can annihilate and produce me two photons, and here we are talking about TeV masses, right, for the particle. So these will be TeV photons. And it is very hard, well, it's not like impossible, but like it is kind of hard to produce these TeV or very, very high energy photons, which look like a line, right, in the in our galaxy through standard model processes. And as a result, if you see an excess of a photon and they form a line, then it might be indicating that there is some dark matter annihilation happening. And that's the idea behind indirect detection. Okay, looking for annihilation product of the dark matter in and their secondaries as standard model particles. So I can also draw this arrow this way, right? The reverse order. So so this is called a collider. And here the idea is I can take two standard model particles, right? Proton or like electrons or proton antiproton, collide them together and in the hope of producing some dark matter particle. Right? So if we build a collider, X-ray particles to very high energy, let's say like a 14 TeV in the case of LHC, and then there are a lot of energy available such that maybe in some of these interactions, I will be producing these very rare particles. Of course, the dark matter itself is not observable, right? Like they just go away, but they take away energy and the momentum from the system. So if we see collision events, which has a lot of missing energy or momentum, that will be an indication that we have produced some particle which might be dark matter, okay? So these are called missing energy search or missing PT or ET searches. And these are how we can use colliders to produce the dark matter particle and look for their existence. Okay. So again, this type of way of looking for dark matter is somewhat limited because first, we just know like this particle that we're producing, right, is stable on collider length scales, right? And collider can, detector can be like order meters or 10 meters, which are very, very much smaller compared to the time scales of the universe, right? The universe is way bigger. And though we can say that we have some missing PT or ET, we produce some particles that seems to be long-lived, we wouldn't be able to know if this particle that we're producing is actually stable, right? This is never something that we can test. The second thing is that even we can say like this particle is stable, and we produce this particle which looks almost exactly like the Higgs, you know, right? It's very hard for us to really say like in the early universe we have produced this particle, because it's possible that the universe just has reheated way below the mass of the Higgsino, and they were never produced in the early universe, and they are just not dark matter, though they have all the properties to be right to be the dark matter in our universe. So in some sense, this is a very indirect probe. But like if we find some stable particle with certain properties, we might be able to do something else. And that is something that is, to me, like the most interesting. And that is called the direct detection. OK, which is arrow like this. So what happens is I have a dark matter particle coming into my detector, hit my standard model particle, deposit some of its kinetic energy in the system, and then leave the system. Okay? And the way that we can use direct detection to look for dark matter is by looking for the kinetic energy that is deposited in our detector, as, which might be consistent with dark matter coming in. Okay? So let's say a little bit more about direct detection. Any more questions about this part? Yeah.
Last year, I think there was a collider run in Fermilab, and they detected mass anomaly in either Z or W. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Could it be that like that the difference in energy is somehow related to?
Oh no! Like so they are like what they are looking for. Okay, so let me explain the context. So like we have been, so like every standard model particle that we find, we try to know what is the mass of this particle to very high precision. Okay, so in and this particle, which they I think it's a W mass measurement. This mass we can have measured like in all kinds of different experiments, and there is a value that we get. And the issue, I think, like of last year was the Fermilab people using old data realized, found that the W mass is very, in their experiment that they find is quite different from the measurements that other people get. Okay, but this is about measuring the mass of a standard model particle, right? And it can very, very well be like a systematics in their measurement. But like it's not something which is missing energy or PT, right? Like you see the resonance, you try to measure like what's the mass of this resonance. And well, here like we're trying to look for like things which are missing. These are very different searches. Okay. And my iPad just died, so I will just go freely. Okay. So next we'll be saying something about direct detection. In the last 10 minutes. So what we are doing in direct detection is usually we have a huge tank of some material. The dark matter come in, scatter off, and this particle gets some of its kinetic energy in this tank. So this is a standard model particles. And maybe in the form of some photon or like electrons, ionization, which deposit energy in the system, and then we try to look for this energy and determine if it is consistent with some dark matter particles hitting the detector. Okay, so all of these direct detection experiments has a sensitivity curve, which look like this. Okay, so you might have seen dark matter as the model, and the mass of the dark matter particle. So all of these curves, have shapes like this. Okay, so it's a Nike shape, where this side is very steep, while this side is much flatter. Okay, so in the next 10 minutes, I will be explaining to you why does the curve look like it. Okay, so and to do and this transition roughly happens for masses, water, GeV. So what do we let's first say like what is the energy that is actually getting deposited when a dark matter hit? Okay, so here at for masses that are much bigger than GeV, okay, let's say like TeV masses, the dark matter particle is very heavy. Well, the nucleon, so here, here for example, we are going to use xenon and silicon, which has masses of their nucleus of order like a few 100 GeV, right? So xenon, it has roughly like 100 nucleons. So its mass is 100 GeV, while silicon is something like order 10, let's just say like order 10 GeV. Okay, so if I have a dark matter particle which is very, very heavy, let's say a WIMP, TeV masses, then as this dark matter come in, the dark matter behaves more or less like a wall, right? It's a heavy one. And what happens is the are these atoms which bounce onto it and bounce back. Okay, so 2-to-2 scattering. So in this case, the amount of energy deposit in the case where m dark matter is much, much more than the m of the standard model targets. So this goes as the mass of the standard model target times the velocity of dark matter squared. And this quantity in our galaxy is roughly 10 to the minus 3 squared. Okay? And 10 to the minus 3 in the speed of light. So here, if we are talking about a 100 GeV target, then this energy is roughly 100 GeV times 10 to minus 6, which is roughly like 100 keV. Okay. So this energy, of course, is much smaller than the binding energy of the nucleons, which is order 10 MeV. Well, it is much bigger than the energy density or binding energy of the electrons outside the nucleus. Right? So what happens in this case is you have xenon nucleus and you have a bunch of electrons outside. Same for the silicon. It will be 10 keV, but the scaling is the same. Right? So you have a bunch of electrons outside. You hit the nucleus. And the nucleus didn't feel the electron at all because the electron binding energy is small. So the nucleus just fly away. And then you have all of these electrons, which gives you ionization. Okay. So that's the situation. And in that case, the deposited energy is roughly 100 keV. And right now, like the technology we have is that pretty much all of these events, which deposit that much energy in the system, we'll be able to see. Okay, so any collision that we see will be registered, and that will be in this this case where the mass is heavy. Okay, so everything that hits roughly. Okay, so this is the case. So there is a second possibility, right? Let's say I have mass of the dark matter that is order that is much less than the mass of the standard model target. Okay, let's say like my dark matter mass now is like a few GeV, right? So now the xenon feels like they are the heavy target, and the dark matter is something like a very light which is bouncing off it. So the amount of momentum transfer that can be done in this case is maximized by the mass of the dark matter times the velocity of the dark matter, right? Which means that the energy deposit is maximally delta p squared over 2 times the mass of the standard model, which is otherwise this, right? Okay, roughly. So now if I take this equals 100 GeV, this 1 GeV, right? Then I get GeV squared over 100 GeV times 10 minus 6. Right, so this is 10 minus 8 GeV. This is roughly 10 EV. Okay. So what does this mean? This means that if like the dark matter mass is light compared to a GeV, and it is much much getting as it gets lighter and lighter, the energy deposit will at some point become so small that it will not be able to ionize the atom anymore. Right. So in that case, there's nothing that we are seeing. And as a result, we have no sensitivity. Okay. So these two cases are basically what governs this plot. In the left-hand side, what we are seeing this very fast rise is basically the fact that for light enough dark matter inside this xenon tank, at some point, the energy deposit is so small that I'm not going to see anything. Okay, so I have an exponential cutoff on the sensitivity. On the other hand, in this case, I will be able to see all the things that that hit. So I only care about the rate of the interaction, which is equal to the number density of the dark matter times the cross section, right? And the quantity is something that is a constant. The dark matter energy density is a constant. So, right? So if this is a constant and we measure it to be 0.3 GeV per centimeter cubed in our universe, well, not in our universe, in our galaxy around where we are, then this curve would have a behavior which keeps sigma over m constant, right? And that is basically like this this line here, where sigma over m equals a constant. Okay, so that's this right here, which is basically the fact that as my continue to increase the mass of the dark matter, the number density goes down because the energy density is fixed. There are less and less dark matter that can interact with my target, and as a result, the limit gets worse as I increase the dark matter mass as linearly. Okay, so this is where energy deposit too small. And this is basically the interaction is too rare. So that's what sets this shape of this curve here. So the other information I want to provide is the solid line would be the sensitivity of the, if it is a sensitivity of the xenon, the silicon would be a little bit above. And the reason is that but like the most important thing is to the left, and the reason is basically here. So silicon is lighter than the xenon, so for the same dark matter mass, it is much easier to deposit the enough energy in silicon because m star model is smaller than in xenon. Okay, so in the future when you see direct detection curves, you will be able to know like where they come from. Okay, so that's all I want to say about the WIMP searches. We talked about the three type of searches that we can do, and then we explained to you like how the sensitivity curve would roughly look like. Unfortunately, the Higgs Zeno is somewhere here, and it is still beyond the capability of the wildest dreams of experimental detectors we have. But hopefully at some time point we'll get there. That's all. Thank you.